gravy train. You fat cats, you're all the same. I said, hey now, you fat cats, you're all the same. You grab each dollar, grab each pound. Welcome to the battle.
Hello and welcome to Simplicity Talks, a conversation exploring the issues and trends in the world of business and brand through our unique Siegel & Gale lens of simplicity. I'm Mitchell Cooper.
And I'm Rob Costello. It's been a long time since our last episode, so apologies to all our avid listeners that have been missing out on getting their hit of simplicity over the last few months. It's been a busy few months, but good to be back. So we've been reading recently about one of the big four accounting firms, Ernst & Young, Name & Shame, which has been getting lambasted in the press for hosting a training seminar, which tried to argue that male brains are like waffles and female brains are like pancakes. One of the interesting things that I was reading from one of the articles on them is that one of the recommendations was don't talk to men face to face. They see that as threatening. Yeah, I can see the logic and rationale there. The revelation seems to kind of reinforce this view of financial services firms as being old-fashioned, bigoted, corrupt, greedy, all the old adjectives that you see time and time again being thrown around by the media. But we do a lot of work in financial services, from retail and investment banks to wealth management, private equity, insurance, accounting, and fintechs. And we've been getting asked a lot about how firms can stay relevant and competitive in the future. How can they win the minds of the best, the brightest, the most diverse talent that can help these firms to innovate and lead in their space? In short, many financial institutions are asking, you know, why would a young graduate from a non-majority social group or just in general ever really consider working in financial services? So we did a piece of research.
In the research that we conducted across seven countries with more than 1,200 participants, we got really into the weeds of how students and postgrads from different backgrounds perceive a career in financial services today, and really what are the key things that financial institutions need to be working on to make sure they're top of mind when it comes to recruiting and retaining the best and the brightest and most diverse young talent to future-proof their firms moving forward. So to take us through the findings and the implications of this research, we are joined by James Moretti, our research strategist, and Becky Zuna, who works on our strategy team.
You were both in the weeds of the research and the subsequent analysis, so looking forward to jumping into that with you.
Yeah, and actually, Becky, I was wondering if you could maybe kick us off. Just obviously the case for diversity doesn't need to be made, but what actually is the kind of the rationale behind the study?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, one of the things that we're seeing definitely happening is that diversity and inclusion is so important, especially to the millennial audience and these millennial applicants. You know, we're seeing, according to a recent study by PwC, 86% of millennial women and 74% of millennial men say they consider employees' policies on diversity, equality, and inclusion when deciding which company to work for. So obviously this is something that companies need to not just be talking about, but doing and really echoing to their candidates. And I think really where this study came from was thinking about how can businesses, specifically within financial services, leverage brand to really change the narrative around D&I within financial services and to really attract and retain the best applicants moving forward.
And it's an interesting one, isn't it? 'Cause it seems like the perceptions are kind of lagging behind the reality in the financial services industry. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we saw in a recent 3-day-old report from the Wall Street Journal that actually the financial industry is really leading the way on diversity and inclusion, and they're making the right efforts. They're telling a good story. They are really changing. You know, I mean, a large part of that comes from a need to, but I think also we're seeing the business case really made for diversity and inclusion and helping innovation and helping profitability, et cetera. So yes, the financial industry is leading the way, but at the same time, it's thinking about how can we then help financial services to tell that story better.
So James, jumping into the research and the methodology and the thinking behind it, you know, what did you get up to?
So yeah, like based on the rationale that Becky and yourselves alluded to earlier, we were sort of interested in exploring what sort of perceptions young people have in regards to the financial services industry. So what we did was we carried out a fairly thorough survey in about seven different countries. where we asked about 1,200 students and recent graduates who are aged 20 to 25 what they understood about the financial services industry, whether they would or would not consider a role in financial services, and then and the reasoning behind their responses. We also did a deep dive into about 80 different companies, ranging from banking to market trading and insurance, to name a few. We did this in order to explore audience perceptions, recognitions, and understanding of these brands. Just quickly as well, we also did some very similar research, if you're interested, in the energy sector as well.
James, maybe you can tell us a bit more about what young people, the people we surveyed, what they actually know about different financial services companies and the various kind of nuances of different sectors within financial services.
Yeah, sure. So it's sort of interesting that you say what they know about it, as we found out that actually like a very minute amount of brands were known to our audience. Barely any were made aware of to more than 45% of respondents. Only large retail banks or insurers, you know, those who are visible companies on the high street or with large sponsorships. Perception-wise, you know, if you ask 20 or 25-year-olds to describe those companies in the financial service industry, you'd sort of get a lot of answers that you would expect, you know, stuff like boring, not enriching, greedy, not giving back to local communities, very selfish themes, basically.
And that's basically built on, I suppose, you know, an entire century, if not more, of perceptions or inherent thinking or bias around those financial institutions. We're now 10 years after the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. Why does that perception still dominate our thinking? And, you know, when we do see the top firms in the S&P index, they are financial institutions that are leading that index in terms of diversity and inclusion. What's holding audiences back from looking at these firms differently?
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, Rob, around there is this sort of inherent bias in the media. And I think a lot of that comes from, one, just a lack of awareness, especially if we're thinking around the talent pool and how we can change the perception for them. You know, when we ask, there's not much clarity amongst this audience on what does it mean to work in financial services? What are the different capabilities or career paths within the different firms that exist? And I think a large part, when you're only really hearing one story or a relatively one-sided story, then how can we then drive that clarity amongst these candidates to think, okay, I'm reading about this, but what does that really mean? You know, is this true or is this just something that is a bias in the media?
So some of those kind of other issues around that perception, if young audiences aren't really clear on what their understanding of financial services roles include and what they're hearing in the media is mostly negative, what does that mean for looking at a talent pool when applying for financial services?
So yeah, when we're looking at our findings, we found about only a third of 20 to 25 year olds have a clear understanding of what a role in financial services might involve. And these were also those who were sort of predisposed to applying for a role. And these people have sort of certain attributes and certain you know, factors associated to them. And these are often white males from affluent backgrounds. They had immediate family members in working in finance. They were from elite universities as well. And additionally, they were studied business or finance-related courses, or they're also working graduates as well. So as you can probably expect, these are people who had experience with insurance schemes, pensions, etc. The most important factor I would say that we should probably look at in terms of who is currently applying is the motivation. And they weren't necessarily motivated by anything to do with a work-life balance. It was mainly finance themselves, which is ironic because they were more concerned about the money as opposed to anything to do with, you know, growing with the company.
So what you're saying is there's kind of like a self-selecting group here that while people from more diverse backgrounds might not necessarily see finance as a natural career, there is a certain group of upper-class white males from elite universities who just naturally gravitate towards it, and you're kind of stuck in this...
So it was this vicious cycle, I would say, is what it is. Yeah, it's a lot of ABC1 white males, which is, you know, the upper echelon of society.
Mm. I suppose on that, just to be clear, in terms of some of the parameters that we were looking, that you guys were looking at with that research in terms of different social groups, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So we looked at... I can tell you basically the demographics we sort of explored. At the base level, it was those who were students and those who were graduates. And then we looked into class as well. We sort of defined it as a ABC1 versus C2DE. And then we also looked into ethnicity as well. That's why we were primarily concerned that a lot of people within who were predisposed to working in financial services were, you know, basically just all pulling from the same places as opposed to, you know, more diverse backgrounds, which is sort of where you expect sort of talent come from, as you would bring in different perspectives.
Yeah, it's interesting because ultimately in the society that we live today, particularly when we look at our own generation and subsequent generations, where, you know, we are more globally connected, much more diverse in terms of the makeup or the societal makeup of upbringing and everything else, in terms of the demographic that you've described that seem predisposed to financial services, it seems very specific and doesn't exactly sound to reflect the ideal talent pool that, you know, financial institutions need to be trying to engage, I suppose.
No, it's definitely not the optimal situation. So as you can see, it's creating this vicious cycle, as we were saying earlier. So in order to sort of look into how companies can get the most ideal talent, we've been calling it top talent, but I think in terms of, you know, what we're saying here, it's the ideal talent, really. We created a new segment within our research, and it was based on the qualification of whether or not they had a 2-1 or above, and it was also based on their motivations, and this includes stuff like all driven by job fulfillment, long-term stability, and opportunities to progress, which is quite interesting, because when we looked into that group, we found that it was more diverse, it was unbiased based on their families, whether or not they worked in financial services. They were also just more thoughtful, independent group, basically. It skewed heavily towards red bricks, so it wasn't people who were from, like, Oxbridge. It was also, though, postgrads. But again, these are the people who would want to nurture their ability and their skill. Mm. And most interestingly as well, it was also quite heavily skewed towards females as well. So
it's not excluding that self-selecting group completely. It's saying we're going to take the top of that self-selecting group.
No, exactly not.
And include that top of that group along with what we're calling our ideal sort of talent pool segment. What are the things that kind of turn people off applying to positions in financial services, and where are the places where we can really win as a financial services company?
Yeah, I think we really found a few key messages or things to communicate. So first, it can kind of be summed up as help me understand, help me drive clarity on what would a career look like, what is the role that I would be stepping into, what does it actually mean to work within financial services? So there's really this clarity bucket. Then there's this help me find meaning bucket of how can I resonate? How can I identify with where I'm working? What does it mean beyond just the day-to-day sort of that clocking in, clocking out experience?
Paycheck.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And then finally, you know, it's help me find balance. So not just talking about work-life balance, because obviously that's, you know, ideal for everyone is to have the optimal work-life balance, but really thinking about what does it mean for my employee experience from when I start on day one all the way to when I finish and move on and become an alumni of the company or whatever it might be? How do I maintain a part of this network, and how does that idea of balance and my firm's involvement in my life and my personal connection to the firm, how does that come to life?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. So when it comes to clarity as well, I mean, this was particularly true for students, those who are currently in education. So about 33% of students seem to reject financial services very early due to a lack of clarity.
So literally kind of like first decision point, if someone puts a financial services role in front and they're like, nah.
Yeah, I don't understand what I'm doing.
Then don't know what it means.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah, and then it was quite interesting that we found about later on after that, about 12% would then fall off based on the feeling of not being correctly qualified. Hmm. Or at least, you know, not necessarily feeling that they're not necessarily qualified, but also that they don't have the right background as well. So this is, you know, so it's not just necessarily your qualifications, but it's also stuff to do with, like, you know, your ethnicity, your background, your family affluency.
It's really interesting because that is basically a reflection of the bias inherent.
From a social psychological perspective, it creates a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where you end up just sort of, again, diverging at this riverside where you get two different groups, and it sort of becomes the, you know, the white male pale side and then everyone else who probably does have the qualifications and the right background, or at least the motivation to do so, but doesn't end up becoming the talent for your organization that you want.
Yeah, I think one thing that, you know, we're kind of talking around, but this term of the imposter syndrome and and what does that really look like in this industry? And I think, you know, it is one of those terms that's often used and just kind of thrown around. But it is exactly this. It's that idea of the self-selection bias and that, you know, someone who would be a great candidate doesn't have the confidence to really come in and apply for these roles. And I think when we're thinking about driving clarity and sort of to combat this idea of the imposter coming into work in financial services, it's really around how can we communicate that career and why they're a good fit and why it's not just about finding someone who's in this traditional mold of the applicant.
And so can you, Becky, give us any examples of companies that might be doing this well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's about reflecting the role and reflecting what it looks like. But also, I would argue that it's more than that. I think it's not just what does your About Us say? What does your career page say? What do the actual postings look like? Because that's more table stakes. That's kind of things that every business should have and should really be driving clarity there. I think to really drive the best talent, it's about creating this shared sense of purpose. So helping applicants see themselves in the organization and finding something much bigger than the day-to-day. And I think an example of a business who's doing that really well is when we look at AXA and their purpose of empowering people to live a better life, where that's so clearly not something that is just for customers. It's really reflected in the employee experience and in the way that they empower their employees to tailor solutions, to interact with customers in a different way, to think independently. You know, when we're thinking about driving clarity and really attracting the right candidates, that's the kind of thing that candidates want to see. It's what is my role going to look like at this office? And it all really comes back to the purpose of the organization and how it aligns to their shared purpose.
So that's kind of that first priority, is clearly articulating the role, showing the value of experience, or, you know, risk losing talent really early on in that journey, especially, you know, with students. So that the second bucket that we talked about was meaning. James, could you
I can go into that. So after that, we know this is particularly more true for graduates, really. These graduates were sort of twice as likely to consider financial services than students. They just want to know more about their work and, you know, that their place would be within that organization. And it's just not necessarily just to do with, you know, just gaining money as well. They want to make sure they're having a positive contribution to society as well as themselves. Again, going back to clarity, they sort of about 13% feel there's no clarity at all in terms of that. So they sort of drop off and they don't apply. They just don't find it as exciting. 28% of graduates don't actually think that it's going to be meaningful work.
So that's interesting. If meaningfulness is one of those big drop-off points, what are the things, Becky, to bring you back into the conversation? This is what you were digging into. What does meaningfulness mean in reality of actually how do you convey that, how do you implement that and help these guys go, yeah, look, you will be getting a meaningful experience if you come and work with us?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to authenticity. I think it's how are these brands creating this sense of community that's really true to the business and true to the purpose that they're talking about, the story that they're telling, but really the experience. And when specifically thinking about diversity and inclusion, it's the inclusion piece that really brings in that authentic idea of how are we creating this environment that's welcoming to our ideal talent pool, not just our traditional talent segment. Because if it's not inclusive, you know, candidates aren't going to thrive in that environment. And this requires more than just messaging and communication. It really does require some structural change. It requires a change in operations, a change in leadership, a change in how we're hiring, etc. I recently heard a story actually around Lego and something that they do, which I just thought was really interesting and a small example of this, but really a powerful example at the same time. So Lego, thinking about how can we create this inclusive environment where we're really welcoming and encouraging everyone's strengths and really helping people to get out of this sort of bias or self-selection that we've been talking about and the lack of confidence. So one thing that Lego does is every quarter, they will have every single employee write their strength or something that they do well on some sort of piece of paper, and then they'll post it. And for any project that is going on in the business or any sort of new team initiative that's happening, you're able to go and reference this wall of strengths and really see, you know, who is the best person for this job. And I think when when you're thinking about how can we create this inclusive environment where people from all different backgrounds feel the confidence that they can go and exceed, you know, it's about showing people that we celebrate all different kinds of successes and all different kinds of strengths, not just the traditional kind.
And I think it's super important, actually, Becky, to your point about bringing the best out of people, but also not making any assumptions about who might be good at what, for example, and valuing all different kinds of skills and valuing all different kinds of definitions of success. And to actually bring this around to an example from the financial services sector, I think it's super interesting, especially in that idea of when you think about trying to find meaning in a role, is being able to see yourself reflected within a company. Mm. And one of the companies that do this pretty well, I think, is TransferWise, who are one of the big fintechs. And they actually, I was speaking to their global employee engagement lead about this, and they have this initiative they've started doing because as a fintech, they grew massively and had to move out from the kind of startup mindset and into this world of financial services where they're interacting with lots of very sort of corporate level professional types. And so that people wouldn't get alienated from both those different worlds, they've actually created these two personas, employee personas, that they call profits and professionals. No. And so that your profits are the more traditional kind of tech startup types, and then the professionals are the more kind of buttoned down
strategic thinkers,
financial services types,
sort of. And Elon Musk versus Bill Gates,
you are able to have multiple personalities within an organization and accommodate those. Yeah. And it's quite a nice structure
because that must trickle down afterwards as well into like different personalities and different groups.
Exactly.
Within the professional and profits.
And I think even more than that, it's not just that you're able to or that you can, it's that it actually benefits the business. You know, there's so much innovation that comes from having diversity within. You know, I was just reading P&G bringing in a more diverse applicant or more diverse talent pool really means that they have created all these new innovations and product lines coming out of that.
There's all kinds of interesting things going on. Just for the sake of time, because we're getting a bit short here, but looking at this third bucket.
So the balance, this is mainly applicable to those who we deemed ideal talent, you know, as we said earlier, those who had a 2-1, who had the, you know, I would say correct motivations. They sort of want to apply their skills whilst nurturing them and receiving fulfillment. And we found, like, during the process that about 15% during application was sort of dropping off because they thought it was boring, and 6% thought there was just no balance. And so after all this and all these other perceptions they have that it's not going to be fulfilling, we were left with about 19% of ideal talent who would actually consider a role in financial services.
I think this also element of stressful came out of that as well.
Oh, stressful,
like that they perceive the roles, which, you know, any of my friends that I speak to who are working in financial services, wealth managers, private equity firms, you know, they always seem to be the case of burning the candle at both ends, working 80-hour weeks and everything. It does sound exhausting. Perhaps, you know, that isn't the reality for all, but that's certainly part of the perception.
Oh, no, it's definitely the perception. It's the sort of thing you see within, like, TV shows, like, any form of media, basically, I guess, really. And it's sort of, that sort of dissuades people from thinking that there's going to be a healthy or a sort of fulfilling balance. You know, it's not going to nurture your skills. It's just going to burn you out until you're ash and then blow you away.
So this is like the kind of the top talent who have studied incredibly hard, got fantastic grades, and they want to ensure that they've got a long, stable career ahead of them, helping a business to grow rather than just, you know, working 5 years and burning out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got to remember, these are the people who have mostly skewed towards postgrads. These were those that were interested in, you know, gaining skills, applying them, seeing them grow further afterwards as well. And so there's a sort of priority there of just creating a perception of stability, satisfaction and growth.
Yeah, and I think more than the actual day-to-day of the job, because that will be difficult to change necessarily, at least in the short term, it's really about what is the experience sort of overall, the holistic experience that we can communicate to really help drive that balance. So it's really about how can we start to think about employees as customers and about this holistic journey from when a candidate is first applying all the way through their whole experience. What are the moments that we can really be bring the brand in, and this purpose and the sense of community and all these great things that we've been talking about, where can we bring that in across the whole experience? So it doesn't feel like, you know, you start at this new job, they've told you all these great things when you're interviewing, but then you actually get in and you're like, oh, this is not what I was expecting.
Yeah, exactly. People want to see proof of, like, you know, what they're promising, really, I guess.
Yeah. I think Monzo is one great example of really that authentic, transparent communication of, you know, they do a really great job of communicating their employee benefits from the get-go, so that you don't really have to get into any uncomfortable conversations. You really know exactly what you're getting yourself into and sort of what you can elevate or communicate or negotiate or whatever it may be. But you have that sort of immediate level of anxiety around entering this new field kind of alleviated based on that.
Well, I think we are running rapidly out of time. So
sorry, we've been talking too much.
All that's left. Well, no, it's a fascinating
always
subject.
Always the case with you, James.
Love financial services.
My family going to hear this.
I think all that's left to say is thank you so much, Becky and James, for sharing the findings with us. We're going to be putting the research findings up online, and we'll put a link so that you can download the kind of the findings that we've been talking about as well to all our listeners. So you've been listening to Simplicity Talks. Give us your feedback on our website, siegelgale.com, or via our Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook at siegelgale.
That's the handle.
And tune in next time.
Tune in next time. Thanks, guys.
To one another.
You fat cats get all the cream, leaving us to swim upstream. Said, hey now, you fat cats, y'all, you get all the cream. All aboard the gravy train, destination pink champagne. Said, hey now, all aboard now.